Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Everybody, and welcome to That Android Show, the latest addition to the Serotech Podcast Network. That Android Show is all about, well, you guessed it, Android, the phones, the operating system, perhaps TVs in the future. And we got a lot of things to talk about and a couple of great co-hosts along with me as well. First, I'd like to introduce Access Anna, who runs a popular blog for tutorials regarding the Android operating system. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I really enjoy using Android, and so I'll be happy to be part of the show.
And along with Anna is one of Serotech's ubiquitous podcast hosts and producers. It's Ranger. It's Joe Steinkamp.
Hi, they won't let me go home. I'm always here. I'm chained to this desk. Oh, wait, no, that's Matt. Matt's the beast in the basement. I can't claim that. But hi, everyone. Joe Steinkamp here. And I'm looking forward to pulling some of the knowledge from both of these wonderful people. Anna and, of course, JJ, your website that you've got going on that talks a lot about Android.
Yes, AndroidAccess.net, a lot of app reviews and things going on there. So, of course, you can check that out as well.
Excellent place to go when you don't know if an app is accessible.
Thank you so much. A lot going on today on the show. We're going to check out one of the newer phones, the Sony Xperia Play. We're going to talk about the new Android market. We got some app reviews coming up for you. We got some mailbag questions to answer. And we got to talk about Stem Stumper, the popular game for iOS, which has now made its way to Android. And we have an interview coming up there as well. But first, let's talk about some of the latest Android news. Probably some of the biggest news of the past month is Google's pending purchase of one of the biggest handset makers, Motorola. Google announced the purchase of Motorola earlier in August, and it creates an interesting opportunity and dilemma for Google and some of the other resellers of handsets. Google, probably a little bit tempted by Apple and all the money that they're making on the iPhone and iOS devices, wants the opportunity to both create the software platform as well as some of the hardware for Android. And wondering if this is something that the other developers, HTC, Samsung, etc., should be worried about, or if it's just part of the process of the development of Android.
I think it's really interesting. You know, we have basically two models in as far as mobile phones go. We have the iPhone model where they do their software and their hardware, and then we have at the other end the what we think of as the more typical scenario, which is one operating system by Microsoft or Symbian and different manufacturers. And I think what Google is doing is going toward the Apple model. I think from an accessibility standpoint, it's nice. My own experience with Android is my own experience with Android is the vanilla Android experience, which I think is pretty good. But I get really, really annoyed with a lot of the user interfaces. And I think that as the owner of Motorola, Google will be able to control some of that a little more.
That's a good point. Yeah, looking at the accessibility, Google having a lot more hands into the development of it. And the vanilla Android, you know, looking at, say, like a phone like the G2, which was basically right. A Google-controlled phone, it really was a lot more accessible than the phone for the Sense UI and some of the others. Google, though, I'm hard-pressed to think of another example where they're doing a little bit of both. It's like they want, you know, their cake and eating it, too. They want some phones where they're going to control the hardware and the software, but they're still going to license it to other developers as well. I'm hard-pressed to think of another live example of that going on right now. So,
well, you know, you have Microsoft and the Signature Edition computers at the Microsoft stores. They're not truly Microsoft computers, but they're kind of Microsoft-approved where it doesn't have the bloatware that you would have with another computer like maybe a Dell or an Acer, because they're trying to work on user experience. And I think everybody is trying to take a cue from Apple and how they're providing an all-in-one solution or an all-in-the-box solution so the user experience is better.
I believe the stat was that Apple is making more money on the iPhone than Google is in the entire company. So
yeah. That is scary, but it does put things into perspective pretty quickly, especially when you look at the rise in which Google is taking certain market share And so if they're not getting a certain percentage, then why are you doing it, right? So, I mean, we've all heard that Apple doesn't make money off the App Store, and you know, even though they're taking 30%, they're not necessarily making all this money. They make it through the hardware. Well, possibly that's where Google is going, is to be able to build a better user experience as well as have a better profit margin on hardware and software. But I agree with Anna. If they could say, okay, look, this is how it's done, all you guys kind of learn from what we're doing, either the Nexus S or something like that, then hopefully that, you know, others will lead by example, and it'll cause some, I guess, some stabilization of hardware. So, you know, you know that this capacitive buttons are the in thing this year, you know, those are the new pink or black. So that way you at least have some stable idea that as a developer, well, I know these will work because people are probably going to buy Motorola now because they're a Google phone, and I know it'll have these features in it. That's what's gotten us in accessibility trouble before.
Well, and the other side of that is, I think one of the strengths of Android, which is probably also its biggest weakness, is that people like flexibility. If I want this particular app, I will use it instead of this other thing. And so I think that in that sense, owning one phone company, Motorola, and not others like Samsung or HTC is consistent with what Google does. It maintains some control of some things, but not over other things. It allows more flexibility over other things.
And we can't ignore the patent fights either. You know, everybody's actually buying patents and doing their escalation of Cold War tactics to kind of beat the other guy. So there is some method to the madness of owning Motorola and getting the patents as well.
Absolutely. Is Microsoft, Nokia to a lesser extent, are they right to, obviously they're going to throw up a bit of a red flag because they want to make their company look good. But should the other handset manufacturers take heed at the warning that they're throwing out that, hey, this is going to hurt your development of Android and Motorola is going to be given this preferential treatment? Or should HTC, Samsung, should they just go on business as usual?
Well, it's sort of an interesting complaint that Microsoft is making, because it does give Nokia, at least currently it seems to be giving Nokia that same kind of preferential treatment. So it's a little confusing.
Not to mention Android's reputation versus Windows Mobile. Or Windows Phone 7. I mean, I don't care, you know, what Microsoft is doing or, you know, what Google is doing. I'm really going to want to develop handsets for the operating system that is the most popular if I'm a handset manufacturer at this point.
And Microsoft still makes money off of Android handsets because of the agreement that they had previously. So, you know, they win either way in one respect because they're still getting some piece of the pie in sales or in patents.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
So in summation, definitely it seems like it could be a win for accessibility and some of the other fronts. It kind of remains to be seen what's going to happen with this. We'll definitely follow the story as it plays out.
Accessibility changes have come to Gmail, and there's some new things that are happening in that respect. And hopefully, again, getting back to that user experience and that everything's kind of getting better as things go along. I'm not a huge Gmail user on the phone, other than through, say, mobile accessibility or things like that. Have you guys even...
Believe honest, tried it a bit.
I've tried it a little bit. I'm so used to using K9 Mail that's what I'm using. And I also use K9 Mail because I receive both Gmail and Mail from a different account, which K9 Mail does. But I have tried Gmail, and I really like it, and I'm really glad that it's accessible. It's one of the stock apps that comes with the phone, and it's what users expect to be able to use. And so in the last month or so, it's become accessible. You can scroll through a message line by line without going into a special review mode. You can copy contact information to the contacts. So, you know, if I get an email from someone I haven't heard from before, I can do that. I can use scroll to the buttons with my D-pad, or I can use shortcut keys to reply and forward messages and so on. So I really like it. And I also like the fact that Google is moving forward with accessibility. You know, progress has been slow, but it's been steady. And this is I think an example of a good effort coming into fruition.
You know, it's interesting to see they're slowly but surely fixing some of the major pieces that have been broken. First, it was Calendar in 2.3, And then Gmail being pushed out as an app update for a lot of different handsets. Reportedly, rumor has it the web browser is going to be fixed in Ice Cream Sandwich. So slowly but surely, they're kind of knocking off these pieces. We all wish it would be faster. And obviously, there's still a few major issues that need to be fixed. But I think they're working towards it. And definitely will be interesting to follow the process in the coming months. There was a thing on Ives Free. About Gmail, the app having, or there was some trouble reading messages or only reading parts of messages. Have you tried that? Was it working okay, or was that just a couple of users having problems with that?
I actually noticed that Gmail was accessible before the official release, but it was only partially accessible at that time. I could read some parts of the messages, but not others. Now it works just fine with TalkBack. I believe that the people who are having problems are using other screen readers. So it may be that Spiel or mobile accessibility are not quite ready with whatever it is that makes them compatible.
Right. And that's an interesting side note. A lot of times when Google is updating their apps, they make sure it works with TalkBack, but there's no communication going out to the other screen reader developers. So the new stuff works with TalkBack. The Android market works with TalkBack, the new version, but it doesn't work with the other app. So we've seen this problem come up several different times now, and it's a little discouraging, especially for if you're a developer.
Or is it internally, where you have a large company like Microsoft or Google, and so not everybody is on the same page? I mean, there was a lot of attention given to accessibility at the Google I/O conference, and certainly what we're seeing in Chrome and with Chromevox and Chromium is really exciting. But, you know, does that translate across to Android? In a similar situation, you know, in Microsoft, the Xbox division is not the Windows Phone 7 division, but both are in the mobile devices kind of category. So, you know, sometimes when you're a very large company like that, sometimes teams work in isolation and maybe something didn't come across, or you want to be very secretive because in that Google market update was videos and books and stuff like that. So maybe it didn't get out to anything past the internal development staff. It's hard to say.
Right, right. And speaking of Google and accessibility, Google and ACB have teamed up to develop a survey for end users. They want to find out how people are using their technology, computers, internet, cell phones. And so there's a survey. The link will be in the show notes. And I encourage people to take this survey. However, the survey is supposed to take 20 minutes. It took me almost an hour and a half. It was quite lengthy, quite detailed. I know the specific questions you get depend on your answers. For example, if you say that you use a screen magnifier, then you're going to get maybe a page worth of screen magnification questions. And so it does depend. And I think I answered about 80 questions, and it's very thorough. I encourage other people to do it. Have others of you taken the survey?
I just took it today, and it was pretty a long time taking the survey. I almost didn't make it in time for the podcast because I was busy doing the Google survey. But
yes,
there was it was a very wide ranging survey. As far as this show is concerned, only one question even asking if I use an Android phone, but really nothing else. I was really hoping more for a survey asking about what types of accessibility features I would like to see from Google or what improvements I would like to see. Really, the survey was just gathering information, it seems. What screen readers do you use? Interesting enough, their list of screen readers didn't even include a Chromevox, which I thought was kind of interesting. You know, what computers do you use? Which note takers have you owned all the way back to my Braille and Speak? So it was very encompassing. I guess it's kind of a fact-finding thing, but didn't really seem to offer a lot in the way of future development. But yeah, it certainly, I'm sure, is worth your time. There is a drawing for 7 Amazon gift cards of an unknown amount. 6, because I'm going to win one of them.
But no, $50 for the first one and $25 for the other 6. So I'm getting the 50, okay. I'm telling you.
But, awesome.
But yes, I do agree. It was very, I was expecting something a little more specific. I use Google products on the computer, and I was hoping for more specific questions about that. And I was hoping for questions about cell phones. You're right, there was only one question asking what kind of cell phone do I use. And there was also a question about note takers asking whether having a cell phone capability on my note taker would be a good idea. And another question asking whether a Braille or something was important for my cell phone. But I was really expecting a lot more, and especially since Google does have an operating system that is accessible.
Perhaps they just realized that they know they need to fix a whole bunch of things, and they've heard enough of that from us. I don't know. And at this point, they just want to figure out which types of operating systems and software they need to be focusing on supporting. But I would hope the systems they develop would work with basically everything that's out there. It shouldn't be a solution that just works for JAWS or Window Eyes or System Access. It needs to, or especially just, I've seen sometimes Google develop solutions. Oh, it works really well with Chrome and Chrome Fox. Yeah, that's great. But only 2% of the people have that right now. So that's not really helping anybody. So
they're Google. They don't already know about us. I'm shocked. That's actually, I guess that defeats kind of the one world order philosophy that some have about Google. But it's good that they are reaching out and looking for this information, because it will help in the long run. And I think it gives them a good snapshot of who users are. And if anything, Google does do well once when they can target something or know better and have something to shoot for. Just narrow those parameters.
A lot of talk about Android as far as malware and viruses and things like that. And of course, Android being a more open platform, these discussions are likely to come up. And a story came up that Android users are twice as likely to see malware as 6 months ago. Not sure. See, for one, we don't even know what we're comparing that benchmark to. But it's true there has been some apps on the market that have leaked into and have included some malware. But is this a legitimate concern, or is viruses and malware, is that just part of the game when you're using a computer or a phone?
I really think it's part of the game. The same article said that, Android users were experiencing X amount of virus or malware attack in January, and that Apple users, iPhone users, were having about the same amount at that time. And then I think the point of the article is that Android users are now experiencing 2.5 times that amount. And so I think to a large degree, it's just part of the game. We're downloading things, opening attachments. And so I don't know what Google will do or developers will do beyond, malware software like we use on Windows.
Sure. There's also the popularity quotient. As something gets more popular, then it's going to get more attacks. And like JJ was saying, if it's something where if you started from one and now there's six, then a corresponding ratio of not just malware but fart apps will increase, because you're becoming more popular. So there's also the side of that, and my old statistics professor who said you can prove anything through numbers. There is that opportunity for somebody to say, hey, look, there's even more now than there was before. And we have to also realize that the people who are growing up that are younger than us grow up with this technology, and it's getting easier and easier for them because it's just old hat. It's just perfect. They can just slide in and make these things a little better, or know these systems a little better to be able to do these kind of attack vectors. Whereas 10, 15 years ago, there was still it was harder to find people to be able to do these kinds of things, or social hacks were not kind of as developed as they once were. So there's a lot going on here. I don't know if I fear apps that I'm afraid to download this app or that app. But with anything, you have to do your research and make sure that it's a reputable company and that you really need to be, careful of what you're doing, especially if it's a free app. You need to look and see. And look at reviews and jump online and see other forums and see what other people have said before you go and open that attachment on that particular app or that wallpaper.
Yeah, with an open architecture comes just a bit more risk, especially if you install apps that are not on the Android market, which, of course, many of us see as a positive that you can do that. But that being said, you could certainly, anybody can create an app just about and put a virus in it and put it up as a download and call it something else. So you just have to watch that a little bit. If you're going to download, where you're getting the apps from, is it a legitimate source versus some fly-by-night operation? There's also the some Android apps for combating this. There's one called Lookout Mobile Security, which is accessible. We've tested that a little bit, and that does seem to work as far as fighting many of the threats that might occur. And it probably is a good idea at this point to have a virus app or a malware app on your phone.
Imagine running that on your TV. Could you imagine that? I think it'd be really interesting because you've got, you know, Toshiba with Wi-Fi in their televisions now, or you've got Samsung with internet, other protocol TVs. Well, Google TV is actually open up their SDK, and they're going to have more apps being developed for the Google TV. Now, a lot of people are probably going, haha, I remember Google TV last year. That was kind of a non-starter. Well, Google's kind of learned from that, and they're coming back and doubling down and really getting a lot of people on board with the idea that they're going to be able to download their apps, kind of similar to what Apple TV is doing.
And they learned too. Their first one was kind of, their second iteration was the one that really caught on. So it seems to be a trend here. First of all, the accessibility solutions, TalkBack, Speo, mobile accessibility, there's no reason why those can't be ported over to Google TV. And of course, that'll bring some possible accessibility. I'm only saying possible because we don't know the rest of the interface yet. But one of the parts of that is that the remotes that are being used for a lot of these TVs aren't necessarily touchscreen. They have the Logitech Review has a QWERTY keypad and a D-pad and things like that. So there's a possibility for a lot more accessibility with Google TV, at least to the extent that Apple has, and perhaps then some. That's a lot of speculation, but it definitely will be something worth watching over the next month or two, and something we'll want to keep an eye on.
Yes, and I read an article the other day saying that the goal that Google has is to make a more uniform environment so that the phones, the TVs, and the tablets have a similar architecture, and presumably there can be easy crossover or porting. So for accessibility, that's very exciting. It means to me that a problem in one area can be solved and will address problems in other areas, hopefully.
Exactly. If they're adding D-pad support to make their apps work for the TV, may mean the same apps are now going to work for the phone.
Yes.
So that would be something to watch.
Absolutely.
And you see a lot of those D-pads in remotes, so it wouldn't be necessarily a situation that we have with the phone where, you know, this one has it, but this one doesn't, or I have a trackball here, but I don't have a trackball there. People are used to having some type of arrow control on a TV remote, so that might lend itself to accessibility. Like you were saying, there's a lot of ifs here. But it does necessarily give us some hope that that's where this is going. And we're seeing that kind of thing with Windows 8 and new versions of iOS and Lion. There is this kind of singularity where one operating system with many facets. So there's a core and then there's different versions. But there's a lot of kind of pull for the user experience on all the different platforms.
A lot of talk at the conventions about Google and their apparent increase in commitment to accessibility. This started, you might remember, back at CSUN with their focus groups. They did some more of them at the ACB convention. And at the NFB convention, Alan Eustace, the Vice President of Knowledge, yes, that's an actual title, Vice President of Knowledge for Google, made a speech at the general sessions and talking about a lot of improvements that Google needs to make, and basically coming out and saying that that we failed and we really want to make a lot of improvements. He made a pretty bold statement about Android. Take a listen to this.
Android is an area where we've been weaker, and we have efforts going on in Android. Our release cycles on Android are actually longer than the release cycles of our normal products, and so that will take slightly longer, but by the end of the year, I hope to see some big improvements there as well.
Big improvements for Android. Anna, John, I don't know what you guys think. Is this for real? Is this the panacea that we've been waiting for to fix up the major accessibility holes in Android, or just some more talk?
Well, you know, I found that statement very exciting, especially since the accessibility improvements to Gmail came not too long after that. So I really feel like Google is trying.
Is it that a older Android user gets to enjoy that or not? You know, at Google I/O, they made the statement that you'll see updates on your phone for 18 months if your carrier allows, if it's okay, if your mommy says so. There's that going on. And so it does that mean that to get these accessibility improvements, I have to do it on my next phone, on my next cycle with my cell phone company? And does that put some users off in that, look, I did this Google thing for a while, but my next phone's going to be the iPhone because I know that I'm going to get accessibility in that built in, and, you know, one operating system across all the different phones, on and on and on. So for some people, is it too little too late? Or for others, are they locked in that they can't get these updates? I'm using the LG Ally, and I don't think you'll see that moving to 2.3. I could be wrong, but all indications that phone's already crossed 14 months of life. I think it's 2.2.2 forever for it. So I have to look towards getting a new handset in order to enjoy these new things. Now, is that just complaining? Am I complaining? And because the truth of the matter is a lot of people who don't rely on accessibility drop phones left, right, and center. You know, it's been about 9 months, time for me to upgrade. So is it that they're responding to the market, or are we just stuck on situations where I want to use this phone until it falls apart in my hands?
I think that's one of the frustrating aspects of using a Google phone. My phone is not a new phone. It was not a new phone when I bought it. I'm running 2.2, and I have the feeling that's all I'm going to get, and I feel like I'm probably getting more than my fair share. But I do think that to enjoy the new improvements in, say, 3.1 or whatever's coming up next, I will need to get a new phone. I mean, some people update their phones once a year. They buy the one-year contract specifically so that they can get the new phone, the latest and greatest. But other people that who are on a budget or whatever, they go for the two-year plan. So you're stuck with what you have and with whatever updates you're getting until your contract is up. And I think that's one of the places where Apple does a nice job of just giving people their updates.
Right. They're still supporting the 3GS at this point, which is a phone that's now over 2 years old.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see Gmail is a little bit of a change of approach versus Calendar. They pushed out Gmail as an update for older handsets as well, so you didn't have to have necessarily Gingerbread to take advantage of the accessibility improvements there. Basically, probably if you had 2.1 or greater, at least 2.2, or 2.1, you are just fine as far as that's concerned. As far as the upgrades to Ice Cream Sandwich, it's really going to depend, I think, on the phone itself. The Motorola partnership does help a little bit there, because now there is some movement to update some of the older Motorola phones that weren't going to get firmware updates. Now that Google is going to be owning them, there's been a push to update some of those older Motorolas. So that might be another thing to think about. If you want a phone with a longer shelf life, maybe you get one of the Motorolas, because maybe it will be supported longer. Or at least look at one of the vanilla Androids like my G2, which I would think there is nothing for sure, but that's the type of phone that Barry could get an Ice Cream Sandwich upgrade.
Right.
You know, we've got a lot of talking done already about what's going on in the news, but what really drives the phone is applications. And in the show, we're going to actually take some time out and look at different applications that are available right now through the Google Market. And up front, we're going to have Anna talking about the Keyboard Tutor. We'll throw to that now.
Keyboard Tutor by Icefree Project is a fantastic app. It puts your phone in key describer or key identifier mode so that when you press a button, you hear what it is without actually activating it. This is especially useful when you're new to your phone. Let's check it out. I'm going to wake up my phone by pressing the power button and sliding my finger across the screen.
9:02 p.m. ringer 100%. Phone unlocked. Launcher.
I'm on the launcher, which is probably where you will be when you're new to your phone. This screen has shortcuts for a few commonly used apps, like the phone app. I'm going to scroll to All Applications, which is called Sliding Drawer on some phones, and press the selector.
Phone image. All Applications image.
Now I'm on a grid that lists all of the apps on my phone alphabetically. They're listed from left to right and top to bottom, like the lines on a page.
Keyboard Tutor.
This means that Keyboard Tutor is launched, so the phone is officially in key describer mode. This is what I hear when I press the edges of my D-pad.
Down, right, up, left.
And this is what I hear when I press the selector.
Select.
I'm going to press a few random characters on the hardware typing keyboard.
G, comma, question mark, shift.
At the bottom of the keyboard is the long space bar with a few extra keys. I'm going to find out what they do.
Alt, search, at sign, space, forward slash, menu. Press menu again to view options.
Pressing menu again just gives me a version number. Android phones have at least two alternate keyboards. If I press J by itself, I hear
J.
J. If I press J together with the Alt key, I hear
Alt. Ampersand.
ampersand. If I press J together with the Alt and Shift key, I hear
Alt, Shift, right curly bracket.
Right curly bracket. Another thing I can do with Keyboard Tutor is find out what order my capacitive soft keys are in. Remember, if you hold your Android phone in portrait orientation, there are four buttons across the screen. They are Back, Home, Menu, and Search. But these four buttons appear in different orders on different handsets. To find out what order your buttons are in, touch the lower edge of the screen in the lower left-hand corner.
Back. Press back again to exit.
Pressing back a second time exits Keyboard Tutor in the lower right-hand corner.
Search.
Left of center.
Menu.
Right of center.
Launcher.
Pressing home is another way to exit Keyboard Tutor. Finally, you can use Keyboard Tutor to find out what other hardware controls are on your phone. Mine has two elongated buttons along the right panel. I'm pressing the center of the elongated button that's near the bottom.
Camera.
Now I'm pressing the lower end of the elongated button that's near the top.
Volume down.
And the upper end.
Volume up.
One thing to note, if you're in Keyboard Tutor, when you press the power button to put the phone to sleep, the next time you wake the phone up,
9:05 p.m. ringer 80%. Phone and lock Keyboard Tutor.
Your handset is still in Keyboard Tutor, so you need to press back twice or home once to get out. That's all there is to it. This is a fantastic app that lets you explore your keyboard, your soft capacitive keys, and other hardware buttons.
One of the things we want to be able to do each month is take a look at a new phone that might be out that people might be interested in, or describe a little bit more about a phone that your friends might be buying. One of those phones that we looked at, or at least I had an opportunity to go to the Verizon store and play around with, is I looked at the new Xperia Play, which is Sony bringing the PlayStation to your phone. And not truly the PlayStation, because they actually do have a new PlayStation Portable coming out on AT&T at the end of the year, which is running Google Android. I believe that's going to actually run 3.0 and above. But the Xperia is running 2.3, and the phone has a slide-out controller. So it's very much like the PlayStation controller, where you have the ability to use your two thumbsticks. But in this case, they're buttons, very similar to the PSP. And you have a D-pad, and you have some action buttons on the right side, your X, your square, your triangle, and your circle. And you do have some bumpers kind of on the phone up top, but those also serve multiple purposes. The screen is very large. We're talking about in the 4-inch category, kind of thereabouts, up or down, and very bright. And that was one of the first things that I noticed about that. And of course, you'd have to have that in order to have a video game controller phone. But the unit was also very heavy. I wasn't expecting it to have kind of a heft to it. And also the keyboard, if you have smaller hands, when you extend out the little game controller, it doesn't necessarily feel kind of like it just is overweighty. It feels like it's going to kind of fall one way or the other, either towards you or away from you, unless you have larger hands to be able to support it. And it's very thin as well. So where with a regular video game controller, or with, say, something like the Nintendo DS or the Sony PSP, there's enough kind of height to the unit that you can feel comfortable having your fingers under it and your thumbs working it back and forth. But because this is a phone, it's so thin that it's just very difficult to hold for long periods of time. I couldn't see myself playing games on it for hours on end. This would be something where you're waiting in line and you just do something really, really quickly, and then, you know, you put it away when you're done. As a phone, I don't know. I haven't had a chance to make calls or anything on it. You could use the D-pad to cycle through things to be able to get the things with, say, TalkBack or something like that. But you would have to use the touchscreen in order to type in things. So you might be using the TalkBack screen to do that, or, say, the virtual keyboard for mobile accessibility. This unit is kind of, you know, slow. You've got the 1 gig Snapdragon. It didn't look that way when going through menus, but naturally, real world usage would be something different. I've read a couple of reviews online where people have kind of said that the battery life is not as strong as they might hope, but of course that could also be changed in firmware over time. And I'd be curious to see if there's an extended battery for this unit to see if it would change matters or at least give you some weight to make it feel a little easier to hold. But as I said earlier, it was already kind of weighty as it was, so I'm not sure if that would work against you too. As a standalone gaming unit, I'm not really sure that I would want this unit. I would probably hold off and see what the new PlayStation Portable looks like from Sony. That's going to have 3G wireless on AT&T. That's set for sometime in March for a United States review, release. But for other phones, as far as gaming is concerned, I just don't know if this would be something that you would want to get yourself into a two-year contract for. So along with the new things that are coming out with games, there were also videos and books in the new Android market. I am not a fan. I'm just going to get that out there first. I don't know about you guys. I know visually it's more attractive, and I've had sighted people tell me that, oh, it just looks so much better. And I can understand that because the experience for buying apps and discovering apps on iOS is really superior. I've said that in other podcasts here on the Serotalk Podcast Network that I enjoy discovering apps in the iOS store, and that can be very difficult when doing with Google. But now it's just damn nigh impossible for me to go experience things because it's hard to find those things in the way that the Android app store is, or excuse me, the Android market. I don't want to get in any trouble calling anything app stores, but the Android market is really hard to discover things with. What do you guys think?
I haven't spent a lot of time on it yet. What I've discovered is that if you press the selector on, say, books, you get a list of books. I really haven't explored because a lot of books aren't accessible if they're ebooks. So I haven't played with that very much, and I haven't played with the movies. The browsing is a little bit more frustrating because I seem to get maybe four or five titles and sort of cycle around those. But to be honest, I really haven't spent a lot of time exploring it and playing with it and just buying something to figure out how it works and whether it works.
I guess I use the market a bit differently. I mostly search for specific keywords or things like that. So
right.
That experience is actually improved because you find the search button, you press that, you type in what you want, and the page as it's arranged now, the actual app detail page, it's a lot easier to follow. You can go down and you can see what's new. The buy button or the download button is basically right near the top now instead of being hidden way down at the bottom. So that's very easy to find. And once you press that, the accept terms, all that button is also right next to it. So that is actually a lot easier. There's a known problem when you go to the My Apps list, if there are updates, as you arrow through the list of apps, at least with mobile accessibility and Spiel, it will not read the app titles. And that's a Google bug that they need to fix because they're sending some strings that shouldn't be sent. So basically, as you arrow down, it says 1 of 18, 2 of 18, 3 of 18. So that's definitely annoying if you want to look through your list of apps. That's something that absolutely needs to be fixed.
It says updates, and then if you arrow down, you'll hear installed. And that's how I knew, oh, okay, well, those are the rest of my apps. And moving backwards and forwards, left, right arrow is weird too, because it seems like just when I think I'm moving to a control that might give me some information, I'll be back on the dreaded up one level, and that was just really frustrating, considering that it was so much easier to discover or find buttons in the previous version of the marketplace.
I do a lot of my browsing on the web market, and ever since they introduced that, it's really become kind of a treat, because you don't have to connect your computer to your phone. All you do is you find the app you want, you press the install button, and you basically confirm it, and then it is wirelessly sent over to your phone. So I install most of my apps that way because I can browse, I can look at reviews a lot easier and a lot more efficiently on my computer than on my phone.
And for those people who don't have keyboards on their phone, that might be a better way to do things than to try and do it through the virtual keyboard or other versions of that to be able to get to the information that you want touchscreen-wise. I agree with you. on that TalkBack is the way to go. I actually had to turn off the other screen readers to go into the Android market, because I kind of thought, okay, well, if anybody's going to work with it, it should be TalkBack, right? And for the most part, it does, and it helped me discover things, but it still was kind of a more frustrating experience. Now, with that said, as we've experienced together in our podcasts, in Tech Chat and others, this is where we are today. And updates can come, and so that could make this whole conversation irrelevant, possibly before we release this podcast, but could make this whole could make the whole thing irrelevant in a month or two or 3 months or something. That's the nature of the web. So when people ask us about, is blank accessible? Well, it really depends on the moment and time and how you're accessing it or what you're accessing it with before you can say something, because there's no definitive answer to that question.
We saw a little roller coaster with the Foursquare app a week ago. They made some changes. They made the check-in button basically inaccessible for 2 or 3 days, and then got out a fix that fixed most of that. But you see that quite a bit with, it's accessible now and it's not accessible tomorrow. One of the differences, though, between this and a computer, on a computer, if you download a new version and it doesn't work, you can pretty easily find the old version and bring it back. That's a lot harder to do on a phone.
That's kind of what we're looking at as far as the big phone that's out that people are playing with, or the newest thing in Google land that has our attention. And, we'll be looking at a lot more of that going forward. And we're interested in your suggestions, as always. You can follow us on Twitter at @ThatAndroidShow and make some suggestions to us on what we should look at, or if there's a certain app or phone that we should go out and try and get our hands on. Changing focus, JJ's coming up next to talk about a program called FlipZoo.
There are a lot of apps in the Android market which allow you to record yourself and then upload it to a website. Others allow you to broadcast in real time so people can listen to you all over the world. But FlipZoo is one of the few which lets you do both. FlipZoo, spelled FLIPZU, offers a very simplified interface which allows you to broadcast yourself from your phone to the world. Let's load up the app and see how it works.
Logged in with FlipZoo, window, Chelonext, Trasnoshen Linea, 1 hour ago, 41, lit, 1 of 50.
The main screen of FlipZoo shows a list of current and recent broadcasts, which you can select and listen to if you want.
Lit tester, started a new FlipZoo, 5 hours ago, 37, lit, 2 of 50.
Here's somebody's broadcast right now.
Play pause, FlipZoo, window, play pause, button.
After selecting the item, I just press the play pause button, and then I can listen to it.
Play pause. FlipZoo player. Tester, 2:18 a.m., 2 of 10.
You hear some guitar music that somebody else is broadcasting, presumably from their phone.
Enter your comment. Play pause. Button.
And you can leave him comments if you wish.
FlipZoo, window.
Tester. Going back to the main screen,
5 hour Chelonext. Start a new live broadcast button.
You will see the start a new live broadcast button. All I need to do is press this button.
Start a new FlipZoo. Enter broadcast title, edit field.
Put in a title, such as That Android Show.
TAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDSAANDROIDS
We are now doing a live broadcast on FlipZoo. A message has been placed on my Twitter feed that I have just started the broadcast since I've linked FlipZoo to my Twitter account so my followers can listen to me. People can go to the FlipZoo website or use their Android or iOS devices to listen to my live show right now. When I'm done broadcasting, I press the stop broadcast button. My broadcast has now been ended and is being archived on the FlipZoo.com website. So people can now go to the website and listen to the broadcast that I just created. No having to upload my broadcast to a podcast feed or converting into other formats, etc. I could foresee all sorts of uses for this app, such as broadcasting interviews from a convention floor, or broadcasting the audio of a meeting or a gig that you're attending. In closing, it's worth mentioning that the developer of this app was very receptive to making changes and improvements so this app could be 100% accessible. And we definitely appreciate the work of all the fine Android developers that are willing to make their apps accessible for those using accessibility. Again, that's FlipZoo, FlipZoo. It's available for free from the Android market. For That Android Show, I'm JJ Meadow. We're back here on That Android Show and talking to Quasi Mensa, the developer for the popular STEM Stumper game, which is produced by Anansay Productions. Kwasi, welcome to that Android show.
All right, thanks for having me.
Why don't we start out by talking about the game, for those who might be a little bit unfamiliar with it. Tell us a little bit about the game and where you got the idea for STEM Stumper.
STEM Stumper is a blind accessible puzzle game where you guide Mamiya the Vine through different parts of a garden to find fertilizer, but you have different items that are in your way, like stubborn stumps and a weed killer. And you use things like angry acorns and slingshots in order to open up paths for Mamiya to get to her goal. The really cool thing about it is that everything in the game has its own soundtrack. And as you get closer to it, you hear more instruments from that soundtrack come in. Plus, we've made sure it works really well with voiceover and talkback. And I think we've had people beta test it with Spiel also on Android.
It's a really interesting concept to make a game of this type accessible to the blind. Where did you get the idea for that?
It's kind of part of the mission statement for Anansay Productions. We kind of wanted to make games, but make them be more diverse, include people who aren't normally included when you think about games. And I have more of a traditional games background. And I kind of wanted to take that and show that, you know, more people can be gaming together.
Was this the plan all along to do the iPhone version first and then move to Android? Or what was your motivation to come over to Android? Was that in the works all along?
No, actually. I had the iPhone version done, and I was almost ready to move on to the next thing. But I just happened to have a lot of friends who are tech geeks and wish they could play it and couldn't. And just looking at all the stats about how many people own Android phones and just being able to kind of set us up for our next project to do it, it just made the most sense.
What mindset did you have when you went into this for Android? Were there particular going to face or particular advantages you wanted to pick up and use in the development of the Android version?
Coding on Android is a lot harder than on the iPhone because you have so many different devices you have to support, plus kind of Google's code for it isn't as mature as iPhones. On the iPhones, you do a lot of things and it just works, where that's not true on Android. But the thing we went into it is, hey, we have this game that already works. We just have to, you know, make the Android parts of it work. So that kind of helped us along.
How much of the code were you able to reuse, or would you just do a lot of rewriting on the code? And what other types of changes did you have to make to get STEM Stumper to work on Android?
There wasn't a ton of code rewrite. It was more understanding what we had to write. I think the bigger change was the accessibility interface. On VoiceOver, you know, you have to use swipes and double taps in order to interact with things, whereas on Android, you kind of don't have that. You are still able to touch the screen the way you normally would with or without TalkBack on. And you also have to work with D-pads and people selecting buttons that way, which is something we had to add for the Android version.
Yes, for me, it was an interesting experience as one of the beta testers. I'm still not used to touching the screen, so I really had to learn to touch the screen and find Mamiya that way. So I think I was really expecting to be able to use the D-pad. Did you find that other people requested that, or that they got used to using the screen when you were going through the beta testing process?
I found a lot of people who were like you, Anna, who were assuming that it was a D-pad based game, which is interesting to me because I am personally an iPhone guy and everything is about, you know, touching the screen. We kind of added it to kind of make it accessible, but it's definitely not the primary way of interacting with the game. Although we did a lot of work to kind of make it more comfortable, but it is still kind of a lot of wonkiness if you're trying to use it D-pad only.
Right, and now that I'm used to it, and I also wasn't a gamer, which is a really which was an interesting thing for me to learn. Now I actually enjoy it using the screen and not the D-pad, but it was a learning experience for me. So I think for other Android users, you need to go into it knowing you're going to touch the screen, and it's actually really fun.
Yeah, I think that's kind of one of the things that I'm carrying forward for the next project. Is we didn't design STEM Stumper at all thinking about people using D-pads because we didn't think we were going to go on Android. So that's something we're going to take into account in the next game.
Sure. Now, did you have a lot of experience, or if this is your first audio game project for phones, did you do a lot of research as finding out what audio games were available either for phones or for the computers? And I ask that in part because you took a wildly different approach compared to most people, where most people, when they develop audio games, they use the stereo field to portray the action around you, where you didn't rely on that at all. You took a completely different approach.
Yeah, I definitely checked out games like Papa Sangre and Orify. I guess I came at it a little bit differently because I come more from a kind of a traditional games background, and I was looking to make a game that wasn't just an audio game, but also got sighted people excited and interested in playing in it. So I think that's why we took at it very differently. Plus, we knew we didn't quite have the budget or the expertise to do all the crazy things that, you know, that like the Papa Songer guys were doing with positional audio. We just aren't experienced there, and that would have cost us a ton in the game. We would still be working on the game if we tried to go that route.
I've read some of the reviews on mainstream websites and blogs, and sighted people really like the sonar mode. Have you gotten a lot of feedback about that?
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of people who say like they think the game without sonar mode is too easy. It's the moment you put it on that it's really like challenging to them, which is something I was really afraid of. I thought sonar mode, they would think it's silly and not play it. So that's been really encouraging for us.
During the beta, did you find that there were certain phones, handsets that work better than others? Are there certain types of phones that are easier to work with as far as programming, or does it need to be newer versions of Android?
We basically went back and forth on whether or not we're going to do Gingerbread only, which is 2.3, or support 2.1, and we cited 2.1 since we talked to people on the Eyes Free mailing list and are like, yeah, everyone's still using 2.1. Other than that, there have been wonky issues from phone to phone, but I don't think we're not, you know, cutting edge to anything tech-wise, so we haven't had any phones say, like, we're not able to run the game on our phone because you're pushing it too far hard or something.
Gotcha. As a follow-up to that, do you get much value? Every so often we see these error reports where you can report something to the developer. Do those help you? Do you get a lot of those? And do you really need people to fill out the comments on those? Or how do you view those?
Those are immensely helpful. One of the things that StemSemper, we are, you know, of course, had that first version that didn't work on certain set of phones. And we would get one-star reviews instead of getting those error reports back, because those actually help us figure out what's going wrong on your phone.
What has the response been as far as sales? Is the app selling, or is it just picking up? Are you getting a buzz?
It's not doing terribly well, especially compared to the iPhone version over the same period. But I think there's a lot of different factors. The fact that we came out so much later than the iPhone version and kind of didn't have such a big press bump around it. And also, Android market makes it really hard to get, you can't give out promo codes. So it's really hard to give it to people to review and say, hey, please look at it. And it's really hard to, you know, do things like giveaways in order to have more excitement about it.
What would you like people to know about your game? What makes it interesting and worth trying out?
I think the thing that makes it really interesting is once you get to the later levels, and it's much more about that feeling of, you know, once you get it, you're like, oh, like eureka moment. We've tried really hard to make a lot of our levels feel that way and not just tedious. And, you know, that's actually a fun thing to play. We've had a lot of people talk about how the game is addictive and, you know, you always find yourself playing like just one more level, just one more level, or just one more star. I think that's one of the big problems, too. People think the game is really designed so that you can get through it very easily, but three-starring is where the challenge is. And then people will one-star levels and think like, oh, that was easy, and not go back and really challenge themselves.
Well, and once you get to a point, yeah, you have to get the three. Yeah. Otherwise, you can't go forward.
Oh, absolutely. And that was my experience exactly. When I was beta testing it, I thought, oh, well, big deal. But then there came a point where I could not put it down. And, you know, everyone living in my house was going, would you turn that music off? Would you just stop it? You know, it was very addictive.
The problem is the way it's set up now, it kind of requires you to sit down and, you know, kind of be with it for a while, which isn't the way mobile games should be set up.
Has the initial that lack of sales for Android, does that discourage you from doing future Android projects, or do you consider it more of a learning experience?
I consider it more of a learning experience. I think the fact that we have it solved for Android now should make it easier for next projects, newer projects, and it doesn't cost a terrible amount more now that we have the infrastructure in place. So I don't think we're going to be turned away from doing Android projects, but I think there's always going to be iPhone and Android. I don't think we're ever going to focus just on Android until we figure that out more.
Well, that's good. Do you have any projects on the horizon?
I'm currently doing some contract work to kind of, you know, figure out to get Anansi some more money. And then I'm prototyping some stuff that's in the really early stages and hopefully should be really fun. I'm still figuring out whether or not it's fun or not.
Well, sure. If people want to get more information about StemStumper or learn more or download the game, how can they do that?
You can go to our website, www.anansiproductions.com. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. Twitter is just /AnansiProds, and Facebook is facebook.com/AnansiProductions. And we're on the iTunes App Store, and we're also on the Android App Market.
Awesome. And of course, we'll put those links in the show notes. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Hey everyone, it's Joe. I'm back to talk about iBlink Radio, which is on the Android App Marketplace. You can grab it over there by just searching for Serotech or iBlink Radio. Those are two words, by the way. Let's go through a little demo of this just to kind of give you an idea of what it's like. If you've ever used the iOS app, we appreciate that. But more than that, there are some differences between what's on the Apple devices and what we put in for Android. So I'm going to go to, I've placed it on my home screen, so I'm going to go there.
iBlink Radio.
I'm going to pop in there.
Submit an iReport.
So right on the front page is our iReport. You can actually click on that and leave us a voicemail. So if you're listening to the show, you can actually click on that on either your iPhone or your Android device, and you can get right to us and leave us a voicemail about this very program. Hint, we'd like you to do that. Also,
month in Access Tech for August 2011 at 9 p.m. Eastern via Accessible Event.
So we have a bunch of stuff here on the front page, some stuff for the Serotalk Podcast Network, currently at the time of this recording, some of our 2011 convention coverage. But if you know this really well, the front page, that is, you can get to podcasts or radio reading services or to community radio and things like that just by using your keyboard. So if your phone sports a keyboard, you can hit the letter P and get over to podcasts.
Podcasts.
I'm going to go in here, and I'm just going to go over here and hit T.
Podcast website, the Creative Solutions Podcast.
Oh, there we go. So that's the first T in the list. Really easy to do, to go back and forth between things, to be able to do that with Android phones that have keyboards. It is a wonderful shortcut and easy to get back and forth to things, but that wasn't all. If I come back here to Community Radio...
Community Radio.
And we'll just go over here.
Net Radio, 2020 The Blink.
I'm going to hit 2020 The Blink just to see what's going on with those cats.
Where listeners come to hear the vision. 2020 The Blink. Pause button. Stop button. Pause button.
So pause button. So you can arrow back and forth to get to the pause button, to the play button, but you can also hit your menu key. And if you hit your menu key, it's going to throw you up into...
the menu list.
So you can actually go back and forth through the menus and switch back to your player by hitting the menu key. And you can surf for other content while listening to content, which is really neat. Also, it puts it into the notification bar. So if you jump to your notification bar,
status bar. Fashion designer John Galliano found.
Whoops, I'm not playing. Hold on. Let's see.
Click. Where is the play button?
So, I went back and forth there. I hit the play and we heard the music again. I brought down my status bar and it told me I was on 2020 The Blink, and I actually went into that, clicked on that, and it took me back to the front page of iBlink Radio. I hit my menu key again and went right back over to pause. There's some other great things that we added to iBlink Radio for what we did in a difference between iOS and Android. One of those being that we went with white lettering on a black background, which is kind of standard for Android apps and menu screens. This is good for those who are low vision, a very large orange kind of banner for most of the way that they do things, so you can tell what's highlighted. You still have the local content, so if you go down to the local content area and there's a radio reading service in your area, we look to see if your GPS is enabled and grab that to be able to say. So if I did that and I'm outside Houston, I will get Sight and Sound Radio, which is there in Houston, Texas. So that's a great feature that's in both platforms. So, to give you an idea, there are some hardware keyboard shortcuts. There are some neat things in the ability to jump back and forth with a menu key, and all of this for free. And you know what? It actually is a great place to be able to follow this show right through the Android market.
Music, media, and more. Learn what's cool about what consumes your free time on End of Line. Another great show from the Serotalk Podcast Network.
Well, at the end of each show, we're going to take a look at mail that we've gotten in from you guys out there listening. With all of our Serotalk Podcast Network shows, we rely on you, the community, to be able to tell us what we should be talking about, because we're very much into the interactive vein. In order to do that for our first show, I reached out on Twitter and asked people to give us some questions, and I've got a couple of them here, so we'll take them in order. At Lizbot asks, my question is Android accessible to the totally blind person? And if so, how? Well, it's kind of towards the bottom of the show, but I mean, we could extend. I'll warn the affiliates, we're going long tonight.
The only thing that I would say as a potential issue is definitely you need sighted assistance to get your phone set up initially. But once that is done, it's not like you're going to lose speech every day and you're going to have to find someone to help you fix that up. So once you get that done initially, it's just like having to have someone help you install your Windows or something like that. Obviously, we would like that to be fixed, but that's really the only shortcoming that's inhibiting a totally blind person from using Android independently at this point.
And part of the reason why we're doing this show is we've done different focuses on tech chat before, and they've been wildly popular because people ask this question a lot. And it's kind of why we sat down and said, okay, well, let's just do a monthly show on that. Because in the last year, since our first one that we did sometime September, October of last year, the Android landscape has changed dramatically, and the accessibility has changed a lot since, you know, 1.7, 1.9 and above. So we wanted to be able to focus on that and to be able to answer this question and provide links and to be able to focus on different people in the industry who are doing things like that. I mean, Nolan Derelick would be a perfect person to bring on and talk about how it's changed, because he was one of our guiding posts back in December. So we hope you stay with us, and we hope you keep giving us these kinds of questions, because we hope to answer them as we go through from month to month. Next question. Beth Swain asks, I suppose the obvious question is, what kind of apps do you love and what devices do you use?
I have a T-Mobile G2. That's my current device. I also had a MyTouch 3G Slide. I like that phone too. I just wanted something a little bit newer, as things usually go. You know, every few months, got to get something new. It has a slide-out QWERTY. The keys are very easy to feel. The home menu, back, and search buttons are optical buttons, so they're not physical, but that's okay. Where they are located, it's very easy to figure out where they are. So that's my phone. As far as apps, just I stick to a lot of the basics. I use Foursquare a lot. The one I just reviewed, Flipzoo, is actually one of my my new favorites. Heytel. And some of the other... I just use a lot of the basic stuff on the phone. I use the web browser. Do a little bit with email. GPS apps, things like that. So always finding new things and definitely finding a lot more cool apps for the phone.
I have a Motorola Droid 1. It has a slider keyboard with a D-pad that's on the actual keyboard, not on the face of the phone. I think that's the only flaw that phone has. I really love that phone. She has a personality, and she's my best friend sometimes, you know. And so I use it for a lot of work-related things, so texting, email, and a notepad application called UNote that I use for memos and things. I use the navigation app and walkie-talkie to walk around in unfamiliar areas. It's really a practical device. It's a little bit like having a mini computer in your pocket, and I'm really happy with it.
I'm using the LG Ally, running 2.2.2 on Verizon. The unit has a slide-out keyboard, and it's tapered, so the home row key and some of the other keys are raised in the middle, so where G and H are, and then it slopes off to the left and right. It's very tactile. It has a really good feel to it. The extended battery I adore with this phone, because it gives it a nice weight. I know it's in my pocket, but it's not overly large. The screen is a little smaller than I probably would have liked, but that's far and away not one of the reasons that I looked for in a phone. With that said, it's also my 3G hotspot. and it's been very durable and very wonderful and reliable. And I'm going to probably miss it eventually when I move to the next unit, because it really has raised the bar and what I'm expecting in a phone. I came off the Motorola Q on Windows Mobile to this phone, and I thought I was going to really be upset when I left the Q, but the Ally has been just a really good, reliable phone. But it's kind of reaching, you know, 14, 16 months, so it's kind of hitting its peak. I'm looking at moving to the Droid 3, possibly for my next phone, because I must have a keyboard. That is not a want, that is a must-have for me, and it's very much a part of who I am. And I'm looking at the Droid 3 because it has the dedicated number row, and that's what I like about my LG Ally, is that I can actually dial numbers right from the phone when I have the keyboard out. My app selection varies. I have a lot of goofy stuff, so I have a Doctor Who sonic screwdriver. I have a Star Trek phaser. I have The Onion G4 TV. I have a lot of media stuff. Mediafly, in fact, to catch up on Twit and things like that. I use that as my podcatcher, and that one's been kind of reliable and easy to go in and set for when you're on Wi-Fi. Go get these. Don't download in these situations, and it's something that's very customizable. I'm using Seismic, but I really want something better, because Seismic used to be a lot better for talkback and mobile accessibility. Facebook and some of the other normal apps that you would run into, like Ustream and YouTube and other things like that. And we're going to feature those as we go forward. The final question that we have here for this episode of That Android Show is from Big Bad Bat. And the question is very apropos, I guess, for some people. Are you receiving psychological help for your choice of Android for your smartphone?
I am receiving psychological help, but not because I chose an Android.
Yeah, I'm not even going there.
I think that sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's about it there.
I think that definitely sums it up. I think some people might be suggesting that we seek psychological help, but be that as it may, I really like having the best of both worlds. I like having my Android phone and my iPad. I can straddle this line and I can argue both sides, not just for this podcast, but personally. I like having the ability to know the differences and be able to form my own opinions about whether that works or not. And I don't really have this desire to have an iPhone, not only just because I'm a nonconformist, but also because I want to be able to press a number and know that I pressed a number. Or if I hit the letter C, B, or V, I want to know that I hit C, not have to hear C, Charlie, or B, Bravo, or tell everybody in the room, shh, 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 I'm trying to dial something. You know, and I've seen that happen at convention and other places. So I like the freedom that my Android phone gives me.
I'm really amazed that people are still so leery of Android. I on some of the discussion lists that I'm on, I hear people talk about how inaccessible Android is. And I think, have you tried an Android? I mean, it's very different. And I think people are afraid of things that are very different. I learned to use a Mac recently, and I almost killed people near me, and because it was just so different. And I think Android is the same way. It's just a very different kind of experience, and you need to give it a little time. But it's a fantastic phone, and even though it's got a few gaps here and there.
Kind of like my friends gave it to me because I've never tried sushi, but yet I talk about how disgusting it is. And I guess that's, you know, probably the same thing. If you've never tried it, you know, exactly. Give it a try. Now, if you can find, we're starting to get to the point now where you probably can get a 2.1 or a 2.2 phone used on eBay for under $100. You could find like a MyTouch Slide or an Ally or one of those older phones. You don't need the phone service. You can still try out Android without the phone service if you don't want to jump ship. And it would kind of give you an opportunity just to play with it a little bit and you know, see if maybe it is something that you didn't give it a fair shake the first time. Yes, there's limitations, but there's limitations for just about every operating system out there. So let's recognize that. Well, I guess we've made it. The first installment, shall we say, of That Android Show. Thanks, Joan. We've made it. Yes, one complete show, and we'll see if they actually let us come back for a second one next month. But God willing, that happens. Anna got to us, and we got this list here of apps from Lifehacker. And a lot of times, mainstream publications, they do these lists of best Android apps or best iPhone apps. So we decided we'd take one of these lists and go through it and see how many of them actually work for us, what's accessible, and you know, if it's not accessible, what other alternatives are out there.
Keep sending us those tweets with questions, and we'll be happy to address them next time.
You can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/thatandroidshow.
We also have the androidaccess.net website, which is the one that that I help run for app reviews and more information about Android.
And for tutorials on how to use your phone, visit my blog at accessibleandroid.blogspot.com.
That's going to do it for us this month. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye-bye.